drawn into your magnet, darkest trap. I wish I could eat your cancer when you turn back.
Greetings, everybody. This is Tabitha, back for another edition of White Wellness. Today is March 13th, 2021, broadcasting out of New York for the American National Radio Network. That song right there was Nirvana with Heart-Shaped Box, way back in 1993. And just looking at that video, it almost seems like that was a different era. Some of you out there who are around my age probably know what I'm talking about, even some of you younger ones, just seeing how things are so different. I was reflecting yesterday about how literally all the music nowadays sounds like it's been tuned in a certain way. Like it actually doesn't sound like it's organic, you know? Like I'd rather hear like a record that has like a little bit of, you know, that grainy type of sound than the stuff today, which is all electronic and there's been a lot of talk. I've never done a show on it, but I've been thinking about it, about the hurts in music and how supposedly, not supposedly, and I'll get to that in a moment, that after World War II, White War II, or World War Jew, depending on what you want to call it, that the hurts of music was changed to be nefarious, to be deleterious. We cannot be surprised. That was another reset of some sort. Now we're in the throes of another one, it seems like. And last couple of days, I've been sifting through some of the news or the Jews over on Talmudgram, and I'm witnessing a fall of civilization with a lot of the stories that are coming out, especially with just things like language and the disbursement of funds. So for this show, I want to talk a little bit about just some signs of the decline of civilization. And this show, of course, is not meant to be a black pill. It's just meant to be an awareness pill, for lack of a better word for pill. Pastille, we can use that one that Molly thought of on one of our shows. So yeah, I want to talk a little bit about that, and then want to talk a little bit about health. I always like to add that little bit about health, and I guess knowing these things too. Even the things that are rather unsavory are still kind of an important part of health, so we don't allow these unsavory things to steal our essence. So to start out, I saw, like I said, a couple of very unsavory stories whilst I was on Talmudgram. So one of the stories I saw was that San Francisco, or sometimes referred to as San Fagsicco, has celebrated the first transgender, or what I would call transsexual, district in the world. And yep, you read that right, or I read that right. They already have a homosexual or a gay district named the Castro, where they fly the rainbow flag. And now they're going to have the first, quote, transgender or transsexual district, flying the Trini flag, which is an unusual blend of baby boy and baby blue with a white stripe. Always thought that was unusual, but I think there's a more to it, of course. This is going to be in an area of San Francisco known as the Tenderloin. This is a very, very extremely unsavory area of San Francisco. I can imagine since I've last been there, it's only gotten more unsavory. And I've been to all of these areas many a times, the Castro, the Tenderloin, all of these areas. A Tenderloin is not a place that you want to get lost in. It's just, is very, very unsavory. Lots of majorities, mainly blacks, many of them addicted to crack, what I like to call quack. It's not a very good area. One time I went to a farm market there because it was supposed to be, supposedly a cheaper farm market than the ones that were in the nicer, more high-trust areas of the city. So I went there, and I actually was able to score some pretty good stuff, but getting there and getting off the bus, the time it was more bus travel than Uber, this is years back, it was just, you could get the feel that this place was rather unsavory. Definitely wouldn't be a place I'd want to spend a lot of time in. And there are other parts of San Francisco that are very beautiful, but the city is basically, I'd say, the number one experimental, like, laboratory, if you will, in the entirety of the United States. I would say it's definitely San Francisco, with, I guess, California or Cabalifornia or California being the state that's the most experimental or most laboratory-like, but the city of San Francisco definitely takes the cake with a lot of the stuff that they let fly there. It's such a juxtaposition between all of this absolute degeneracy and insanity, like the promotion of the LGBTQIAV+, all the BLM, all the OID AI, all essentially the same agenda, obviously. But it's a beautiful place with beautiful microclimates and great growing conditions for a multitude of different things, amazing food, great wine country. But all of this has been poisoned too, but it's such a parallel between all the degeneracy. So here is an article, like I was saying earlier, just a little while ago, about the first district that is a transsexual district in the entire world. San Francisco's Tenderloin District has been a documented home for transsexual residents since the 1920s. Let's take a gander at this video.
Everyone around me in my life told me that I would have a better life when I came to San Francisco. So many trans people come here like refugees from other cities in the United States.
When we talk about trans women of color, there are so many layers of oppression that they have to deal with.
We live with this extra layer of fear and anxiety and being Black and being trans.
As a Black trans woman, as a teenager in San Francisco, I learned very quickly that while San Francisco affirmed me legislatively, socially, I had walked into job interviews and been laughed at. I had been spit on the street.
In a lot of ways, we've been dehumanized and we've been denied access and discriminated against in many, many ways.
The abrasive reality is that most transgender people in San Francisco are living in abject poverty and have limited to very few opportunities to shift that.
I think that's the biggest part of the hopes and the dreams of Compton's Transgender Cultural District, is a safe place for queer and trans, gender non-conforming, non-binary people to come to San Francisco and find a more welcoming place, finding a more resourceful place.
Providing housing, entrepreneurship programming.
Making sure that we're providing them with the opportunities to succeed and the tools that they need in order to succeed is a huge part of what the Transcultural District is doing.
We stand together, we stand as one, we will not be broken.
They're all wearing the chattel feed bags in this little montage right now. And I was just thinking this, like, in a way, if all these people who are trannies are moving to San Francisco, it's kind of like Jews going to Israel. Like, in a way, it's a plus, right? And we could look at it that way, in a certain way. It's a kind of a cultural balkanization. And, of course, see how they're playing up the BLM angle, the Black tranny angle with all of this. Of course, that's just part of it. And also, I don't loathe these people who are trannies. I know some people, like, loathe trannies, loathe gays. I don't, personally. I'm not going to put that much energy into it. Like, I think that's a waste of energy that I could put into something else. So I don't loathe these people. I feel like they're being used by the system or the shitstem. And I think, of course, they're being utilized as like a political pawn by the Oive system. And of course, if you read the Talmud, I think there's like, what is it, six? Of course, it would make sense if it was six genders or something like that. So all of these things we're seeing in the world today, all of this is just, you know, these Jewish ideas, essentially, and they have no problem using these people, you know, to get their ideas rolling. So if this area of San Francisco becomes this place where it's just like a refuge for these people, that's going to make it seem like it's more, you know, normalized or typical. Like I said, I don't have anything against these people. Do I think that some of them are downright unsavory and degenerate because of what they do and like the way they behave around children? Yeah, absolutely, 100%. But just to loathe somebody because they have sexual dysphoria or homosexuality, that would be ridiculous. So I'd be like loathing someone that had like the big C, like cancer. It's how they act and what they do and how they politicize this agenda. That's what I loathe, and how the current that runs through this is always anti-white, right? And always anti-male and really anti-female too when you think about it, because they all want to be women. It's really just anti-human, essentially. So yeah, they're against themselves as well.
And we'll overcome.
If I could describe the Transgender Cultural District in one sentence, it would be for us, by us.
Its mission is to cultivate an atmosphere that celebrates the presence, the resilience, the culture.
It's the first legally recognized transsexual district in the world.
We realized that if we didn't do something, that the Tenderloin was quickly going to become gentrified and our history.
No, and I don't think it was going to become gentrified. Maybe there's the area that coincides with Knob Hill, they call the Tender Knob, which is pretty nice some parts. I doubt it was going to become gentrified. It's like a scum bucket, but whatever.
Completely erased. Trans people have really been a part of this history of liberation when it comes to the LGBT civil rights movement right here in San Francisco.
How can you be liberated if you can't even stand your own body? Yeah.
Cisco, we had the Compton's cafeteria riots. The police were in the Compton's cafeteria, which was a safe space for members of the trans community and drag queens and queers. The police went into the Compton's cafeteria and began harassing the patrons. A drag queen or a trans person wasn't going to take it anymore, and she ended up throwing her coffee in his face. And that started a riot that lasted several days in the Tenderloin. And it was the first collective uprising, or at least the first documented collective uprising of LGBT people in this country.
I think the Transgender District affirms that rich history and gives trans people and the broader public access to those moments in history that I think define gay and trans liberation that we know today and the freedoms that we have.
When the opportunity came up, we actually started out going after a building, which was the Compton's cafeteria building that is still there at 111 Taylor. There was no way that we could get that particular building. That's when we decided we'll ask for the district, really thinking about a one block radius. And we were very fortunate enough to get six block radius.
I think the work that's happening in the Transgender District is laying a foundation for transgender-owned businesses and for transgender people to have housing and be in a area that celebrates their existence and their lives and provides opportunities.
What trans people have to look forward to is having a place where they can come to and say, like, you know, this is for me. This is a place that is welcoming of me and celebrates me and where I can be myself and don't have to be afraid or ashamed.
One of the biggest impacts of the Transgender District becoming the world's first legally recognized district of its kind, for me as a person, seeing myself empowered as a trans person and seeing those trans flags on the streetlights and seeing our experience celebrated was a huge shift for me in my own relationship to my trans experience, to actually be proud of being a transgender woman.
Hopefully what we're doing now really is serving to inspire people to do more.
I think a future for trans people in San Francisco looks like social, cultural, and economic empowerment, true empowerment, and true inclusion.
Looks like a way, I think, to make this city more anti-white than it already is, I would say. And I'm wondering, too, are they going to be renaming this Tenderloin District the Transgender District? Because, I mean, they still refer to the Castro as the Castro, even though it's known as the gay or the homosexual district. I wonder if they're going to be calling it the Transgender Loin or something like that. And then it gets me thinking, like, these people have mutilated their loins, their genitals, right? It's kind of a weird juxtaposition of language right there. And that brings me to my next topic before I just want to talk a little bit more about this first, but we're going to talk about language after that. So as you can see, the Oive system, shitstem, using people who have sexual dysphoria and then just, you know, using them essentially as a weapon in a war against whites. It's very obvious from the beginning that all this LGBT stuff was exceedingly white. And the sad thing is that it seems like whites who do this, especially the young whites who think they're sexually dysphoric, it's a way of buying out of, like, the, you know, the risk of being, like, labeled like a white supremacist or a racist or a bigot is that, you know, you chop your boobs off, chop your wiener off, you mutilate your vagina, you do all this type of crud, and then you get, like, some cred by a bunch of, like, you know, BIPOC cretins. I mean, no thanks. It's horrible. I mean, this is really the lobotomy of the of this century. Like, last century we had, you know, horrible stuff like that electroshock therapy, you know, these are quote treatments, allopathic treatments, lobotomy, insulin shock therapy, which was something they used to do to quote mentally ill people. They would put them into basically a coma, like a, you know, if by fucking up their blood sugar. I mean, these were treatments in allopathy. How could anybody trust this? I mean, and transsexualism is like the pinnacle of allopathy. Mind-boggling. Okay, let's check the chat for a moment. All right, and let's see. All right, so yeah, I just wanted to say that about that, really just mind-boggling. I saw it this morning and I said, well, I think it's worth talking about, not in the way that I'm talking about it for, you know, I don't know, just like, it's not like the Gorilla Glue thing where I'm gonna waste time laughing at it. I'm just illustrating what they're doing, who they're using, why they're doing it. So now, on to something else, and this has to do with language. Yep, which we've seen, of course, being morphed a lot, especially with the utilization of emojis. I feel like the whole language thing has really become more that way since emojis, which kind of makes sense because now these people are just, you know, not even speaking. You know, they're just like using all these emojis. I feel like it's hard sometimes when people use them. Like, I only know what 5% of those emojis mean, I think. Most of them are just whatever, right? So I saw this, and supposedly there were 600 words added. Let's see if I can just find this story right here. Here we go. So there's been 600 new words added to the dictionary. This is from dictionary.com. But first I saw two of them in a little post. So two of them, one of them I had never even heard of. It's supposedly an African-American vernacular of the word or the expression fixin' to. Like sometimes in the South, I'll say like, I'm fixin' to do this. Like you hear it more there than you do around here. Sometimes you hear it from older people around here. So supposedly, and not supposedly, but supposedly the Black American vernacular of fixing to is finna, F-I-N-N-A. So I'm finna to, like I'm fixing to go to the store. I'm finna to go to the store. I mean, yowza. I mean, this is really just the degradation of language. And remember all the talk about Ebonics, like back in the day and all that type of stuff. I mean, we really have it now. And I remember when there was talk of making that into like an actual language that was thought by some people just to be, you know, quote, racist and all of that. And of course, that's just the word that they use when you do something that's truthful and they don't like it and they don't want it to happen anymore. So they just use that word and it shuts down a lot of people, but it really means you're on the right track and they want to stop you from talking. And that's pretty much what it means. So yeah, now this is going to be a word that I guess is on dictionary.com. I don't know if it's in like the dictionary. I know at one point though, I believe it was the Oxford English Dictionary that added that, that thing, you know, what it was, twerking as well as, I think it was really just terrible words. Was ratchet in there too? Like these words shouldn't be in the dictionary. Urban Dictionary, yeah, all right, whatever. That's like Wikipedia, who cares, right? But in the dictionary, like it's actually accepted formally, no, it shouldn't be. And another word that's going to be added to the dictionary, this is another word that's basically Ebonics, you know, is as opposed to the word supposed, you know, supposedly, it's going to be supposably. That is not right. It's supposedly with a D, not a B. I've actually been making fun of this thing like for like years, this whole supposedly thing, like actually saying it sometimes in conversations with people who like are really into grammar, just as like, you know, just like to get a jolt and to get a chuckle. But now they're actually adding it on dictionary.com. Yes, that's right. Really not hard to believe, but not wanting to believe it. And I was also, before I found this 600 words article, I was just doing some research a little bit before and thinking about the skull shape and everything so different, you know, with like blacks and, you know, whites and stuff like that. And I've mentioned it before on other shows, but there's something called the simian shelf that blacks and some Asians that are mixed with either the black race, the Negroid race, or the Australoid race, which are the blacks of, you know, Australia, South Pacific, essentially, that there's this extra bone on the underside of like the jaw and the mandible called a simian shelf. And it's just basically like an extra piece of material, like an extra piece of bone where it's thicker. And that, of course, is a primate vestige. Whites do not have a simian shelf unless, of course, they're not white, right? So that's, of course, why blacks have what's called prognathism, where the bottom jaw juts forward like an animal. But what's very interesting about this in regards to linguistics is that animals that have that simian shelf, that extra piece of bone in the lower jaw area, they aren't beings that have a speech or a language. They have sounds and other types of non-linguistic signals and communications that they utilize amongst one another, but they do not have language. And then when you take into consideration that Blacks have the simian shelf, and they're making up all these newfangled fantasy words. It makes total sense because they don't come from a lineage that has a language, right? And of course, you'd be deemed and slammed as a terrible racist and a miserable, horrible person. I mean, it's just because this is the truth, and they don't want the truth out there, and they're doing all these things like that tranny thing and this thing with the language. It is to degrade society. It's to degrade everybody. And there's another word in here that's one of these 600 new words over at dictionary.com that is everyone's favorite word of last year, and that's the word BIPOC, which, of course, the system or the shitstem tells us means boogaloos, ingrates, and pieces of crap. And I have graced everyone with an alternative acronym, boogaloos. Oh, that was mine, excuse me. Boogaloos, ingrates, and pieces of crap. See, that's how much it's ingrained in me. That's what it means. That's actually pretty amazing that I said that first. The shitstem system wants us to believe it means Black, Indigenous, people of color, anything, anything to keep us away from it, right? Anything to keep, like, you know, in, of course, we're Indigenous, but, you know, anything, basically any moniker to not mean white. And in the UK, they use what's called BAME, Black and Middle Eastern. So again, just another moniker, just another anagram or acronym, rather, to keep whites away. So yes, they've added 600 new words. I'm sure many of them are probably just crud, right? So the outlet's article said of the new words, 450 of them are completely new, along with 94 new definitions to existing entries, many of which have to do with the vocabulary surrounding OYED AI. Technical updates include revised definitions of acute respiratory distress syndrome, ARDS for short, of course, because I want to add to the OYED AI hoax, and variants and strains, owning to new forms of OYED AI. So, of course, they always have to update the books when they lie and create another hoax, right? Modified social rituals like the elbow bump caught our attention, especially as the gesture evolved to include more forearm contact than the name implies, the website wrote. We now offer more guidance about the spelling and capitalization of OYED AI, an entry we added not even a year ago, but that already warranted expansion. I think the fact that they use all caps for OYED AI or SARS or any of this crud, it's to be like, look, you know, be scared, you know, it's all caps. It's like when you talk to someone online, I think they supposedly say that it's shouting if someone's utilizing all caps, right? The outlet also added a new entry for the video chat form called Zoom, along with education-related terms like hybrid learning and blended learning. The wokeness of the dictionary came out in the section titled RE, in parentheses, defining race, social justice, and identity, which added the acronym for BIPOC, boogaloos, ingrates, and pieces of crap. It is a unifying identity label for all people of color that emphasizes the unique racial experiences of Black and Indigenous people. Translation, not whites. Whites have never suffered. It was all everybody else, and it was all our fault. They did suffer, right? They're also saying that this label is intended to emphasize the unique racial experiences, and we talked about that already, and contrasted to other non-white groups. Well, there's only one non-white, other non-white groups. Oh, okay, wait, so how does that work? But they claim that so here they're claiming that there are only certain non-white groups that are Indigenous or Black. They'll probably use that however that's probably just to exempt Northern Asians, but I've already seen articles fomenting where they're talking about the Japanese not being people of color. And you know, of course, that Zog does not like the Japanese. The Japanese have a strong sense of, you know, racialism and nationalism, and they also have some, from what I can understand, some DNA overlay with our race. So of course, the Oive system shitstem does not like them. They are not like the Koreans and the Chinese that have Australoid blood that basically are Black, albeit not Negro. That's why they don't have kinky hair. They have more of that Aboriginal style hair, the Australoid race, just like if you look at the Dravidians. But the Chinese and the Korean have the prognatism that the Australoid race, the Aboriginals do and the Dravidians do. And of course, that means they would have a simian shelf. Interesting. I wonder if that kind of shapes their languages too. I mean, I feel like the Japanese language has like more of a way where it's more enunciation and it's crisper the way English is. And I feel like Chinese and Korean don't have that same crispness that Japanese does. So maybe that's because the Koreans and the Chinese have a simian shelf, and that has to kind of, I don't know, do with the fact that their lingual, auditory lingual sounds are different, right? Dictionary.com also announced that it would capitalize the word indigenous, following media outlets' announcements last summer that they would begin capitalizing the word black when referring to blacks, but not white when referring to white people. The new capitalization is included in the dictionary's move to show due respect to the identity, culture, and history of indigenous peoples around the world. So just a way to make it look like whites are the big bad meanies, caused all the problems for everyone else, and have no culture or civilization themselves. Another new word added is supposedly, the mispronunciation of the word supposedly, which a dictionary now accepts as real. Well, of course, they accept Oyed AI as real. They accept the word BIPOC as real. You know, come on. Along the same line, the word finna has also been added to dictionary.com, a phonetic spelling representing the African-American vernacular English variant of fixin' too. The word embiggen was also added, which many readers may recognize from The Simpsons. I don't know the reference on that myself. Some useful words have also been added, including deepfake, which is defined as a fake digitally manipulated video or audio file produced using deep learning and an advanced type of machine learning, and typically featured a person's likeness and voice in a situation that did not actually occur. So, of course, they are looking to kind of just squeeze in or just drip in all of that transhumanism, right? Many of the new words continue. Dictionary makers move to supporting leftist politics. Well, yeah, Jewish, essentially, but yeah, I'll take leftist. In November, Dictionary.com added a new entry for the term court packing to conform to a new Democratic political smear against Republicans. For 60 years, court packing was defined as an unsuccessful attempt by President FDR in 1937 to appoint up to 6 additional justices to the Supreme Court, which had invalidated the number of New Deal laws. But after fears emerged that President Joe Biden might resurrect this notion to flip the ideological lean to the Supreme Court, Democrats began accusing Republicans of packing the court because they filled vacant seats whilst Donald Trump was president. Okay, who gives a shit about that? Dictionary.com is not the only online dictionary to engage in this practice. Merriam-Webster has changed several definitions to conform with new progressive thinking, and they're saying in order to attack Republicans. Well, it's to attack whites. Yes. Saying that Merriam-Webster actually changed the definition of the quote word, quote, racism after a 22-year-old women's complaint. Imagine changing a definition in like a 180-year-old dictionary because like some Zoomer calls in and whines. And this is the world now. I mean, wow. I mean, it's so crazy how people are bowing down to the lesser and the younger, when really it should be the wiser and the sager and the more wizened and the more aged that get their respect. But we live in a society where people who are wise and sage-like are thought to be, you know, outcasts, mentally ill, losers, whatever. And people who are elderly are just thought of as, you know, old and in the way, disposable, useless, worthless. Really awful the way things are. Merriam-Webster suddenly alters definition of preference after Democrats attack Coney Barrett. Okay, the term preference could be offensive. Sexual preference, you can't say that anymore because you're born this way. Actually, they can make people born this way based on all the ridiculous crud that's going on. Multi-generational malnutrition, multi-generational toxification via vaccination, and a melange of other ways, not just via chemical ways, also via psychological ways with things like Tamovision and all the MK media. So now you can't use the word preference. It says that preference as orientation or sexual preference is now deemed offensive. I've always loved using politically incorrect language since I was really, really young. All of this will just further inspire me to utilize more politically incorrect language and to not acknowledge any of their terms. And if I do acknowledge them or do make aware that they exist, I will troll them, like the word BIPOC, right? Or what what I call the virus, Oyed AI. So that was something to do with language, just kind of showing the downfall of civilization. We have a district in one of the most beautiful cities in the Pacific Northwest that's known as the transgender loin, where a bunch of black trannies are basically congregated to, like a mecca. And then we have the downfall of language. One of the things that's, I think, separated us is our language. Like, actually, that's another way that you can really judge somebody is by their language, right? I mean, even if you don't know what they look like, you can just be texting with someone and you can figure out a lot about them based on their language. So, of course, they want to equalize all language. And if anyone was saying, like, oh, we can't add these words make no sense, this isn't a word, of course, you would be deemed a racist. That's how they play it. So speaking of all this civilization crumbling crud that I've been seeing the last couple of days, I saw something else in regards to reparations. So reparations are here in a Chicago suburb, actually, in Evanston, Illinois. So reparations have arrived. This is basically like a extra hefty unstimulus check for blacks. So Chicago suburbs should become first city to give black residents reparations. Evanston, Illinois approved the measure back in 2019 to financially compensate its black residents to address wealth and opportunity gaps from, quote, historical racism and discrimination. Let's take a gander at this video. And of course, this is just a way to, well, give them money, right? Gives me that. And I saw another story after I had collected this article where they basically said that they were complaining that they weren't getting enough money, that it was just a, quote, drop in the bucket. Black Americans who will get $25,000 each as part of a $10 million in reparations from the city say it's not enough. So here they are getting a heap of money that all of us out there could really be very grateful to get that money, right? And they are bemoaning that it's not enough money. So let's take a gander at this video.
Evanston, Illinois, a community of 75,000, has traditionally stood in the shadow of nearby Chicago. But these days, it's in the spotlight, garnering international attention for a first-of-its-kind government-funded slavery reparations program aimed at eliminating the city's racial wealth gap.
Reparations is to make amends for egregious crimes or actions against a community. And our local case for reparations in Evanston was found in housing.
Evanston's reparations program, spearheaded by Alderman Robin Rue Simmons, will use tax dollars generated by city marijuana sales to provide grants of up to $25,000 to eligible black homebuyers. But while the $10 million program is being heralded by many, economist William Darity, co-author of From Here to Equality, says reparations need to be dispersed not at local levels, but at federal levels, and shouldn't be limited to programs aimed at homeownership or scholarships, as neither will erase centuries of violence, economic dispossession, and second-class citizenship.
The government either legally sanctioned some of those actions or turned a blind eye to those actions. So it's the federal government that we think is the culpable party.
Darity has calculated the amount that he believes the federal government owes descendants of enslaved people, not just for the period of enslavement and abuse, but for the decades of discrimination,
you better watch out,
and redlining that followed.
We still find ourselves with mass incarceration, ongoing police executions of unarmed blacks. We have
This is all just a way to pay them, and also let them get away with more of the heinous crimes that they get away with it for, then collectively be paid back for it. And when you think about it, if anyone's going to be footing the bill for these reparations, it should certainly be the Oy Vey's who plucked the blacks out of their motherland and brought them over here and caused this issue for everybody. You know, the Oy Vey should take some of those hollow hoax, that hollow hoax money that they've gotten from writing all those hollow hoax books about, you know, different puffs of smoke with the gas chamber, the phony gas chamber. Give some of that cheese to these people, right? Don't make the taxpayers pay for it. Unbelievable.
Sustained process of discrimination in housing, credit, and employment markets.
How much are we talking here? The reparations, like the actual amount that it would take to make black folks whole, how much?
Well, the total bill would be in the vicinity of $10 to $12 trillion to eliminate the racial wealth differential that exists in the United States today.
While reparations have been discussed in theory for decades, there's been a growing push to make them a reality.
He certainly would support a study of reparations.
From the White House to Congress, where growing attention is being paid to Bill H.R. 40, legislation aimed at studying the impact of slavery and reparations.
Everyone in our country needs to understand the historical context for systemic racism. This day of reckoning, this truth-telling moment has to come along with H.R. 40. And
they're acting just like Oy Vey's, aren't they? Howling, bemoaning. It's like slavery is like the new hollow hoax, you know, and especially since all the BLM stuff over the summer, they really have used that Floyd psyop to basically make slavery be kind of like a mini hollow hoax, you know, and now they have the blacks, so they have had them for a while, but now it's like pinnacle, like hollow hoaxing, you know, but it's just slavery, but it's still like, you know, it's still the same thing.
Repairing the damage.
Back in Evanston, Councilwoman Simmons is fielding calls from cities around the nation wanting to enact their own reparations programs. In addition to the marijuana tax, money for the reparations fund is being raised by the local Catholic church and synagogue, and a local beer company has created a new ale with 100% of the proceeds going to reparations.
I think it's a lot of little steps that will take us to where we want to be.
And that guy who was just talking, who is the owner of that brewery, that was a very white man, pretty decent looking guy with very blue eyes, just, you know, a libshit, you know, someone who's totally cucked out, essentially awful. It could be using that creativity for something else.
With $500,000 raised so far, city leaders say they're on their way to paying back what's owed.
The black community of America is owed the right to enjoy humanity and the same livability as every other group in this nation. We are owed reparations.
Okay, pretty mind-zoggling. Because, yeah, of course, everyone deserves to live in a way that is, you know, makes them feel good, but not at the expense of, like, taxpayers to take all this money, you know, and just funnel it to them. What are they going to use this money for anyway? Is it going to be for organic seeds? Is it going to be for pastured eggs? It's probably not. It's probably going to be for something extremely unsavory. You know, it could be for stuff that just sets them off even further and makes them more of a bioweapon. Mind-zoggling. I kind of knew that this day was coming when they would kind of, you know, do this, you know, and lead to this actually becoming like an actual thing. But here we are right now, I guess, about nearly a year. When did that thing happen with Floyd? I guess that was May, last May. So here we are 10 months later, right? And it's been a brisk 10 months, but nevertheless, here we are. And I see they have this entire page over at NBC News, the entire page. They have actually, wow, they have four pages that you wouldn't even believe the things they're devoted to. A whole page for OIDAI, a whole page for the Chauvin trial, an entire page for planning your vaccination, another page for America's racial reckoning. And that's where I found what I found right now. The latest Jews on protests, boycotts, and the fight against systemic racism that is reverberating around the country. So see, the fight against systemic racism, if you can read between those lines, that is the fight against whites, right? Because they say that all whites are inherently racist. All whites are guilty of systemic. I think they call it systematic sometimes, too. Or I have another word for it, too. So many of these critical race theory buzzwords. But basically, if you can read through that and translate it, the fight against systemic racism is the fight against whites. That's what this is. It's extremely, extremely obvious. Albeit when you look at it from even a more panoramic view than that, you realize that the system shitstem is playing everybody, and they're utilizing the majorities basically as a proxy against us. So when you're racial, you're right, but you have to look even further than the racial perspective. And of course, someone could be, you know, or call themselves a racialist and be ex-tarted, or, you know, be tarted when it comes to allopathy. So, I mean, it's like, just because you're aware of the differences between races doesn't mean that you're actually aware. So yeah, mind zoggling right there. Crazy shit. Crazy shit indeed. So what else did I have to talk about on this show so far? So far we did the story about the tranny district in San Francisco, which was basically just a thing for, it seemed like really just majority trannies, you know, for the most part. So they were using that as kind of like a LGBT BLM type of crud. And since they were wearing the darn costume and all that footage that I was watching and you were listening to, you got a little bit of the Oye de Ay in there as well. And then we talked about the degradation of language, how certain beings who have a simian shelf don't really have a linguistic lineage. And then we talked a little bit about the reparations crud that's going on now. And of course, the word slavery comes from the word Slavic, which is a Europid subrace. So it's not like our people haven't ever been on the brunt of slavery, right? It's just that we don't howl and bemoan for reparations and all that gives me that. Well, all I could hope for is that maybe one day a rain washes it all away. Maybe one day a real rain will come and wash it all away, all this degeneracy, all this insanity, clown world, globo homo crud. That would be a nice thing now, wouldn't it? I think it would be, just to kind of live in a clean world, not just a clean world from, I guess, an environmental perspective, but just like a spiritually clean world. That would be nice. I know there's always going to be things here and there, you know, quirks and kinks and stuff, but it seems that currently we're at this just crazy phase of rapid degeneration, rapid degradation, racial degradation, sexual degradation, nutritional degradation. I mean, all like the hardcore ways to basically degenerate yourself, that coupled with, you know, all the Jews media, which is essentially shock therapy or, you know, lobotomizing. But hopefully one day a real rain will come.
All the animals come out at night. Whores, skunk pussies, buggers, queens, fairies, dopers, junkies. Sick, venal. Someday a real rain will come and wash all this scum off the streets.
That was from 1976 Taxi Driver, one of my favorite movies, and that scene, that little line always makes me laugh, because yeah, maybe it would be a real rain will come one day. And I like how he uses the word venal, which is a word you don't hear a lot these days. You're more likely to hear words like supposedly, right? But venal means corrupt, and we are living in a very venal world. You can feel it, you know. It's like visceral as well as venal. Like there's like a cutting nature to it, but it's like corrupt and cutting at the same time. Like that's how I see it and feel it. And sometimes I try to see it the way I feel it. That's why articulation and language is so beautiful, because you could just say something was corrupt, but when you say it's venal, you know, it's eloquent, it's articulate. Our people had a penchant for that. I mean, look at our languages, not just English, but all the other languages are very descriptive like that. And now we have this hieroglyphifying of languages. I remember a while ago when the whole emoji thing became popular, I remember thinking to myself, I'm like, this just seems like we're going back in history, like we're kind of scaling it back and we're becoming like Stone Age, like where we're just using hieroglyphics. Like that's the way it felt to me. Kind of still does feel like that. So I got a couple of other stories that I saw. I haven't done like a little newsy, juicy story in a while. I've been hitting the health stuff really hard, but I found another story these days, and it appears that some people, unfortunately and laughably, still think that the Out of Africa thing has some legitimacy. It never held any weight for me because it just seems so absolutely insane. And maybe the Oyvay Shitstem system knows that it's like people are just falling out with it because it doesn't make any sense. So of course they have to run the PSYOP on a different level, right? So now they're trying to tell us that new fossils suggest human ancestors evolved in Europe, not Africa. So here they are showing a bunch of like, well, it looks like simians to me, mom and dad simian and a baby simian. And they're saying that experts, of course, argue the jaws of an ancient European ape reveal the key to a human ancestor. So I saw this and I said, huh, what they're trying to do is make it look like we all came from apes. Like apes were everywhere and we descended from apes, like everywhere in the world, not just Africa where they actually are part of, you know, primate species. Like I'm not saying these things to be coarse and demoralizing and abusive. I'm just saying them to set the record straight. It's not a jab. It's the truth. So when they have this out there, they can say, oh, you know, Cheddar Man was real. You know, diversity built Britain, right? So now they can say, oh, you know, those whites, they showed up way later. When they got there, they ruined the party for everyone else. They were mean. They were racist. As opposed to when it was just a bunch of like, you know, monkeys or primates like hanging out like somewhere in Europe. So this is what they're trying to tell us. And of course, some religious institutions have been known for tampering with archaeological finds so they can, you know, dismiss any truths and that their religious crud can basically like be like the majority story. So they're trying to tell us that the jaw bones, more like Jew bones, of an 8 million year old ape was discovered in Nikiti, Greece in the 90s. Researchers speculate that it could be a previously unknown species and one of humanity's earliest evolutionary ancestors. That's, of course, if you believe in evolution. I don't believe in creationism either. These fossils may change how we view the evolution of our species. Okay, so they found an ape jawbone sometime in the 90s in Greece. And this is enough for some people to basically say like, yeah, it was blacks that built Europe. Like that's pretty much what they're getting at by what they're saying, right? And this is kind of like, I guess, a way to stretch and throw like a huge rag over all of Europe, this out of Africa theory. This is an absolute hoax. And who's to say this jawbone of this 8 million year old ape, who's to say that it was really found there? Maybe that they actually just placed it there and we really don't know. So they're telling us that Homo sapien has been on Earth for 200,000 years, give or take a few 10,000 year stretches. Much of that time is shrouded in the fog, Zog fog, of course, of prehistory. Don't you love how they call it prehistory? Shouldn't it all be history? What we do know has been pieced together by deciphering the fossil record through the principles of evolutionary theory. Why are we using that principle? Of course, we're getting to a falsehood of an answer and we want to be as anti-white as possible. That's not me, that's the Oyvay speaking. Yet new discoveries contain the potential to refashion that knowledge and led scientists to new, previously unconsidered conclusions. A set of 8 million year old teeth may have done just that. Researchers recently inspected the upper and lower jaw of an ancient European ape. Their conclusions suggest that humanity's forebears may have arisen in Europe before migrating to Africa, potentially upending a scientific consensus that has stood since Darwin's day. So this, I can guarantee you, they're only saying this because they want to back up their crud of Cheddar Man, diversity building Britain, you know, diversity building all of Europe. Whenever they show these pictures of supposed ancient Europeans, if you even go on Google and you write like ancient Europeans in, you'll see pictures of people that have had their skin like darkened and I'm sure like their nose widened. They are completely out to erase us from history. I hope you understand that. Like it's completely and totally obvious what they're doing and the way that they're propping up blacks into like the, you know, the focal point is just because they're using them. they're using them as a proxy piece. And it's very fashionable to be sympathetic to all of these like Black Hollow hoaxing stories, right? Think about it. In a way, the Floyd incident was the Hollow hoax of Black people, because you can argue that slavery actually did happen. We weren't responsible. Jews were. We know that already. But you could argue that the Floyd thing was the Hollow hoax of Black people. We just lived through that Hollow hoax as opposed to the Hollow hoax that our, you know, grandparents and stuff, or great-grandparents or great-great-grandparents lived through. But we really all lived through like the Black Hollow hoax last year. And now all these reparations are coming out, right? Just like after the other Hollow hoax, when they're asked for reparations after that, right? I mean, how long are they going to be asking for reparations? It's probably going to be for like ever, right? And the fact that they're already getting supposedly what, $25,000 a piece, they're going to be howling for more money. It never, ever ends. And here they show some pictures of rethinking humanity's original story. They show all these primates, all of them have prognathism, all of them have barrel torsos and very long arms and shorter legs. In the case of, yeah, actually they all have shorter legs. And they all are like not standing upwards. And then they show man. They show the skeleton of a white man. Of course, it's a white man, because I could tell if it was a skeleton of another race, because I know enough what I'm looking for, especially if I'm looking at the torso and I'm looking at the face and the jaw. So this is just another psyop for them to further exterminate the idea that whites have any type of lineage or, you know, lineage or any type of like roots anywhere. That's what this story is all about. Make no mistake about that. This is what they're doing. Remember, they're after everybody, but right now the hit is mainly on us, because they're using the majorities to further the hit on us. I think that's comprehensible. So yeah, another story over there with the ape hoax, mind-zoggling stuff. We cannot be surprised. I also saw something else that almost seemed like it was out of The Onion or the Babylon Bee. This sounds so Jewish. It reminds me of a while ago, I read an article. They were talking about wanting to put some sign that lit up in space telling us about the Hollow hoax. Like, I mean, maybe that was just satire. I'm hoping it was, but these days you really can't be too sure, because there's just so much crazy stuff. So now, scientists want to send 6.7 million sperm samples to the moon. I don't know where to begin with that headline, but there's so much zoggery there. So they want to build a modern-day Noah's Ark. More cost-effective, they're saying. Well, looks like that thing just stopped. That sucks. So they're trying to lay plans for repopulation, starting with a sperm bank on the moon. And I think also this story has a bunch of like psyop crud woven into it, because who's to say that we can inhabit any of these other planets? That in itself may be just a psyop for saying, oh, you know, Earth is being decimated. There's too many people, too many cows are farting, etc. You know, at some point, we're not going to be able to live here and breathe here, especially with all the viruses and all the things going on. We're going to have to colonize space, and we're going to have to live there instead. We might as well start a sperm bank there in space to make good use for. And then with the time, we can basically, you know, live there and colonize that area. It sounds to me like more of the savior mentality, just in the transhumanistic way, as opposed to in more of like the Christ-hearted way. But I think this is an absolute psyop. And also just sounds insane. Like, do we really want to give our genetic material so they can just zoom it out into space? So they're saying that this is a modern global insurance policy, which is pretty funny when I read it that way, because it reminds me of what Mike had said on that show we did together last, where he said all of this crap is really just a Jewish insurance policy. I mean, zooming sperm to space, that's the ultimate Jewish insurance policy. So mechanical engineers have proposed that humans establish a repository of reproductive cells, sperm and ova, that means eggs, from 6.7 million of the Earth's species, including humans. They don't just want sperm and eggs from humans, they want it from animals too. And the proposed bank, or quote, ark, would be beneath the moon's surface. This all sounds just Really weird. As our planet faces natural disasters, here they are prepping us for all different types of fear porn. Asteroids and the potential for nuclear war, to name a few troubles. Scientists say that humans must set their sights on space travel to preserve life as we know it. I see this to be, like I said, a savior psyop. Focus your sights on space. Don't live in the now. Don't try to preserve the Earth. Don't live healthy. Don't be an Earth steward. Forget about all that. You know, sit in your idiocracy chair and, you know, set your sights on space. As a proposed bank or arc would be beneath the moon's surface. As our planet faces natural disasters, okay, I said that already, Earth is naturally a volatile environment, says some person at the University of Arizona. Due to the planet's instability, he said, an Earth-based repository would leave specimens vulnerable. As such, they're proposing jumpstarting a planetary exodus of all sorts by funding a human seed vault on the moon as soon as possible. This just sounds like one of those, like, cults back in the day when they all drank Kool-Aid. That's what this sounds like to me. It would store reproductive cells in recently discovered lunar, quote, pits, for which scientists believe lava once flowed billions of years ago. Like, we can't not believe anything they say. I mean, they're like multifaceted, layered lying to us about out of Africa and the ape hoax, like I just illustrated in the last article. We cannot trust a stitch of what they say. It's bound to be nefarious. The so-called ARC would then cryogenically preserve various species in the event of a global disaster. It's almost like they want to induce a global disaster, and then they're telling us that they're preserving all of these species, sperm and eggs, somewhere else, and then they're going to use those to kind of repopulate the planet once they've killed everybody. That's kind of the flavor I'm getting from this. We can still save them until tech advances and then reintroduce these species. In other words, save them for another day. That is so Talmudic and so transhumanistic. The pits are also the perfect size for cell storage. They go down 80 to 100 meters underground and provide ready-made shelter from the surface of the moon, which endures supposedly major temperature swings as well as threats from meteorites and radiation. Yeah, that sounds like a real healthy place to have cryogenically frozen genetic material. Also, they have said that many plants and animals are seriously endangered and cited the eruption of Indonesia's Mount Toba 75,000 years ago as a reason for worry, saying it caused 1,000-year cooling period and, according to some, aligns with an estimated drop in human diversity. Due to human activity and other factors that we fully don't understand, there's already been rapid loss over the last few decades. I mean, who's to say if that actually happened or not? I don't know if they did, but hey, they could be doing anything, right? It's extremely hard to basically pinpoint exactly 100% what they're doing. You can get a general idea, but what they're telling you is always going to be nefarious, right? The quote, ARC concept is already being employed at the Svalbard Global Seed Vault that uses housing plants for plant seeds. So that's for plant seeds. That I've heard of before. On the Norwegian island of Spitsbergen in the Arctic Circle, where scientists say the massive stone structure can endure undisturbed by humans or elements, there are over 992,000 unique samples, each containing an average of 500 seeds. So I've thought for a while, because I've known about that, I've wondered if actually that was just what they were doing to kind of get a catalog of all the old seeds and things that they were actually going to basically eradicate and extinct, and everything's going to be like, you know, Monsanto GMO like patented seeds, or if it's a way to feed themselves in the future. But I kind of don't think it's a way for, you know, the non-elite to feed themselves in the future, because I mean, I would think they probably don't eat a lot of seed-based foods anyway. I'm thinking most of their diet is probably just the, you know, original diet of, quote, the elites, which would be mostly raw animal food. The stuff they always tell us is going to give you all these bacteria, virus, germ, parasite, fungus, when they hoax us out with these viral, you know, quote, pandemics. It's crazy. All the things that they eat, they tell us will make you sick, and then they toss this idea of this pandemic, Oyed AI, this, you know, thing on us, which actually you have to be sick and to eat the foods they recommend to actually believe that garbage is real. They said that in this article closing that they were surprised by how cost-effective this, quote, mission could be. according to his back-of-an-envelope estimates, this is one of the scientists speaking from University of Arizona, to transport 50 samples of each species, 6.7 million is the target, would take 250 rocket launches. By comparison, 40 launches would require to build the International Space Station, which sits on low Earth orbit for far closer than the moon. It's not crazy big. We're still a little surprised about that. This all just sounds like a hoax to me, a bunch of just ridiculous kosher word salad. This to me sounds like a savior psyop way they are looking to harvest your DNA, just like they're basically looking to do with the 8AI test and the vaccination. Remember, they always have to use some type of guise of, oh, space. You know, like something that will turn your head and some people will fall for it, some won't. They always have to use something like this to get people excited about doing something that's really not good for them. So, of course, it's nefarious. Obviously, this is a transhumanistic agenda to get people's DNA in the guise of going to space. See how much you have to filter through these articles that they put out there? It's a layered psyop sandwich. It's crud. And then speaking of them doing genetic samples, you know, utilizing genetic samples of sperm and egg, and then, you know, vaccination and testing and all of this stuff as a way basically to get our genetic material. This has been happening for a long time. This is not something that's new. And I was even thinking about this in regards to Oyed AI, like, when we're healthy, the humans, we have this innate technology. We have this natural technology in our body. But if you're going to be getting something like this Oyed AI vaccination, it's basically going to stop those natural bodily functions. And then it's going to like turn on like more inflammation. It's basically like they're using Oyed AI or other things in the future. They could even be putting it in food, the environment, whatever. I'm just using Oyed AI as kind of, and the vaccination is kind of like a brushstroke over this entire agenda, but they could be doing something where they really want to mess with our own innate technology, because we all have this innate technology, but the more dumbed down people are from vaccination, heavy metals, low protein diet, you know, all the MK Ultra crud, all the crap out there, their innate technology gets weakened, and then they're more apt to and susceptible to basically fall into this filth of this Jewish technology like Oyed AI. So I'm thinking that really what they're trying to do with Oyed AI is not just, you know, genetically engineer people and, you know, off some of them and make some of them into their, you know, cyborg like Goyim slaves, but I also think it's a way of shutting down our innate technology. Because when you think about it, part of the reason that we're alive and everything is that we have all these like viruses and bacteria inside of us. Like, it's what makes us us. And even this PCR test, all it can do is confirm that we're human. So in a way, this whole Oyed AI agenda, you know, to be exact, is about stripping us of our own technology whilst they insert us with their technology, and then they villainize all of our innate technology, all these viruses, all these bacterias. They villainize that to basically say that we are like a biohazard, like we can kill other people. So it's like, no, you cannot exist with this innate Aryan technology or this Gentile technology. You have to upgrade or really downgrade to this Oy Vey technology where we know exactly what's going on in your body and we can control it because we want you as a slave. That's what this is all about. This is what the end game is. And of course, they're using majority races, especially the black race, which is known for being very capricious, having a low IQ, no impulse control. They are using them to orchestrate this because, of course, they don't want whites here because they know that we're onto it. We can sniff out it. We know what's going on. Even the whites that are like under the spell right now, I mean, maybe they're just metaphysical Oy Veys, essentially, in some way, shape, or form. But this whole agenda is about taking away our natural tech. Technology is not necessarily an evil or a terrible thing. It can be in the right hands, it can be a beautiful thing. And of course, the innate technology that we humans have is a beautiful thing. It's what makes us us, right? I mean, think about, like, I've heard stories before where, you know, they put that stupid hat on a baby whenever a baby is born in a hospital. That's actually not a good move because the baby's head has to be out because the pheromones and like the smell of the baby's head will allow the parents to be able to find them. Like supposedly humans and other species could actually find their young just by the smell of their head. That is what I'm talking about when I'm talking about the innate technology of humans. This Oyed AI agenda isn't just about culling the flock and resetting and UBI and the uplifting of majorities and all these queers. It's about destroying our natural technology. That's what I'm trying to drill home. They don't want us to be able to smell our young. They don't want us to be able to think of a friend and the friend will call us because we're thinking. They don't want us to have any of this technology. And we all have it. Some of us have just been abused and degraded so badly that we don't even know that these things exist. But there is a definite ritual that goes on when one has a child in the hospital, or what I refer to as the Zogspital. One of the things is that hat. The other thing is, you know, what they call circumcision, which is razor rape, which of course is a way for Jews to hide. Razor rape became rather popular here in America post-World War II. It was a way for Jews to hide, right? Because Jews are circumcised. I mean, there's so many things. The vitamin K shot, or vitamin K, and some people say vitamin. I like to say vitamin sometimes. There's the silver nitrate in the eyes. There's all the stuff. Even babies who are born C-section, because you don't fight to get out of the womb, you're more likely to not be a fighter and not be like someone who can endure a struggle in life. Like, there is a reason why they try to, you know, engage you in all of these interventions when you are in the Zogspital and having a birth. Like, if you have a thing where like you're born vaginally and it takes you like a little bit of time to get out, people like that usually tend to be like pretty, what's the word I'm looking for? Begins with an R. I'm forgetting it now. They never stop, you know, like they keep on going and going and going. Like it's that feeling of just relentless. That's it. Excuse me. Relentless. Like, and that I guess could be a bad thing in certain ways too. But like, if you're relentless about, let's say, this cause, like, I think that's a good thing, as long as you don't lose too much of yourself in it. But they don't want you to have that quality of relentlessness and resilience. And that's why they do all of these damaging things, especially starting at birth. They want you to be weak. And that's why they do so many of these, quote, treatments or protocols. But I'm just trying to illustrate that this is about taking away our innate tech. The thing is that so many of us don't even know that we have this innate tech, like the ability for a parent to be able to suss out its newborn just by the way the newborn smells. Like, that is innate tech. And sometimes if we're lucky enough to be around an animal, a natural animal, not an animal that's been poisoned via vaccination or has been castrated and had its sex organs removed, but a natural animal, you will observe more of this instinctual behavior. You will see it somewhat a little bit in animals that have been castrated and poisoned, but you'll definitely see it more in animals that are natural. But since so many animals are not natural anymore, and more than that amount of humans aren't natural, like, look, just the fact that they've taken the foreskin off of most men, at least here in America, not necessarily as much in Europe, I don't really know. I think in Australia, New Zealand, and South Africa, they also don't do it as much. I'm not sure about Canada. I would assume it's probably like it is here. But the fact that they've done something like that, that means that you're not natural. The fact that they vaccinate, not natural. Take wisdom teeth out, not natural. All of these things that we just think are, oh, well, you know, just things we do, cleanliness, right? No, these things aren't about cleanliness. These things are about removing our innate technology. That's what this is all about. This is a deep spiritual war, and they know that we have these magical powers, right? So if they're able to take that away from us, it's an easier win for them, and let's not let that happen. So yeah, just a little bit about technology, and then that ridiculous story of scientists wanting to zoom sperm to the moon. Mind-boggling. I hope the average person isn't reading these stories and actually believing what the Oyves are saying, because that would really be tragic. But I kind of get the feeling that that's true. Like, the other day I was out and about and I realized just like more people were wearing like the chat feed bag, and I'm thinking, what is this? What's going on? And then I saw something on the Jews media that they are fomenting the idea of that supposed strain that came over from the UK. It's made over here to the US, and you know what? It's even worse. It's mutated and morphed, and it's even worse than you could possibly imagine. And of course, that's a hollow hoax. Every like 24 to 72 hours, viruses are constantly changing. That's why they wish to give you a new flu shot every year, because it's always changing. It's always changing. That's the nature of it. That's the way it's supposed to be. But of course, what do? They invert and twist that, and they use fear, and they make you think that there's another boogeyman out to get you. In a way, the whole idea of believing in OID AI is kind of like people who think they're going to go to the Big H or go to hell because they ate meat on Friday, or, you know, if they're Oivés, they mixed meat and dairy or something like that. I mean, really, really crazy when you think about it. The entire thing is based on fear, and OID AI is no different. Like I said in my last show, some people, their life is about dodging the virus. That is their life. They dodge the virus. They, oh, I can't go to this place. You know, the virus could be there. I can't go here. You know, I can't get takeout delivered to my house. You know, like it touched too many hands or whatever reason people are using for themselves. Like they've basically allowed the virus to take over like their quality of life and like make decisions for them. Like pretty sad, But the silver lining of this PSYOP is that some people now are questioning, well, who's behind it? You know, who's orchestrating all of this? So that is something that we should be thankful for. That's good to see that we actually have that going on, that people actually care enough to think about that. But I think they were kind of forced to care enough because there were just so many things that happened. It was just like an avalanche of things that happened, and it just made for people just to say, you know what, something is fishy, something is awry here. And I mean, nothing, never in my life, even people who are older who I've talked to who are like, you know, boomer and older than that, there's never been an event in anyone's life alive right now that has any type of measurement to what happened now with all the shutdown. So the fact that they had to, quote, shut everything down, that should be a really good idea to you. If you're still on the fence about this, I certainly hope not if you're listening to this, but that should be a real tip off. I think so anyway. So now let's switch gears and let's talk a little bit about something a touch more savory. Let's talk about food a little bit. Let's talk about, Let's talk about cooking food, which I guess most of us do. Most of us grew up cooking food. I kind of grew up on a diet where we did a lot of cooking of pretty much everything, even like a cooked salad, which I think kind of sounds like really weird, but it wasn't really cooked in the sense it was cooked. It was a pressed salad, where you would use salt and that would kind of, you know, of course, give like the water coming out of it and it would make it kind of like softer. But interesting how, you know, you can grow up on everything cooked. And then as you get older, realize like, well, maybe that's not so good for all foods. Now, in all fairness, some foods are better for you. More, you can easily assimilate some of the things in it when they are cooked. Like for example, like leaves, like kale, that is better to eat cooked because it's going to be easier to digest and it's not going to be as goitrogenic or hard on the thyroid. So definitely something to think about. And also I think it's tastier too. So there's always that. But other things, like let's say animal foods, which are finally, healthy animal foods are finally getting more of a heyday now, which is good. Another silver lining of OID AI is that people are becoming more conscious of where their food comes from. So that's something else that's, I think, important to note, not just their animal products, but their produce. Maybe they're growing some more of this themselves. So that's always something to think about. But oftentimes people think about animal foods in the context of cooking them. Maybe not if they drink raw milk, but overcooking food can be stressful on the body. Of course, it's harder to digest. Now, if someone's been eating a lot of vegetation for a long time, whether it be raw or cooked, probably harder to digest if it's raw. Like people who do like the raw vegan thing, a lot of that stuff is exceedingly hard to digest. Even people who just follow more of a SAD diet or a Western diet who eat a lot of salads, that's really hard to digest too. That's why I said in the beginning of this that you're better off taking stuff like kale cooked. So the question begs to answer, are raw animal foods less stressful than cooked? Well, if you asked me, I would say yes. And I think it's very heartening, very good to finally see the raw meat taking off. 5 years ago, when I first got into raw meat, I've been into raw fish since I was a child, growing up macrobiotic, but just got into raw meat about 5 years ago, I was told by a lot of people I was crazy. Actually, humorously enough, I found out that it's the Jews via eating raw meat. So that kind of opened me up to it. I knew about corruption for years, always studied corruption, always studied the corruption of allopathy and things like that. So that wasn't new to me. But when I finally was able to know who was pulling the strings, I was led to that path via raw meat, which is pretty interesting, actually, kind of funny too. And now I'm seeing a lot of raw meat, kind of like nationalist, racialist channels actually pop up on Talmudgram, which is really cool. It's really nice to see, actually. Although I do see some kind of tomfool behavior kind of woven in as well. And these groups tend to be more male groups and female groups. It's like all these groups I like always tend to be more like male dominated, but there are women in some of these groups. You just don't see it nearly as much. But I'm happy to see that people who are racial and people who are nationalistic are actually caring about their health. That makes me really happy because I really get the feeling that a lot of people who say that they are actually don't. So it's good to see that people actually do care about their health. So with today's unnatural, toxic, ridden, and pollutant-heavy environment, the goal is to continue eliminating and removing as many unnatural, stress-causing habits from our lives to allow our bodies to optimally regenerate. And yes, contrary to what allopathic medicine tells you, we can regenerate the body. Of course, they don't want that information getting out. And I was also thinking about this today too, just a little side thing, but it's very important that they keep up this virus psyop, even though it's like so insane and religious and ridiculous, because the virus psyop is essentially part of the cancer psyop, because the entire allopathic system shitstem runs off of germs, vaccination, you know, cancer, diabetes to an extent. So they really want to uphold all of these things because they need you to fear cancer. And of course, vaccinations are an easy way to increase one's chance of getting cancer. That's like 100%, or any other type of disease that might lead to what's known as cancer. So it's very important for the system shitstem to hold up the Joom theory myth, because they really have to prop up the cancer myth too, because that's how they make their money. I mean, cancer controls society. Quote, viruses control society. I mean, look at what happened in the last year. Back to the article about raw animal foods. We understand our body is very resilient and adaptable, but with seeing the rates of illness and dis-ease, we can definitely make improvements. Cooking foods, including all meat, above 104 Fahrenheit or 40 Celsius for others in the world, produces toxins such as heterocyclic amines that have been proven to be carcinogenic in laboratory animals. Cooked protein is difficult to utilize for cellular reproduction, regeneration, and healing. So the most healing food that you can eat to regenerate your tissues is going to be raw meat. Heating fat above 96 Fahrenheit causes toxic alterations, including lipid peroxides, oily oxidizing compounds that are also carcinogenic. And if you want to prove this to yourself, even if you heat a really high quality saturated lipid too high, it will start to smell, right? Try doing this with a polyunsaturated lipid. It will smell disgusting because these oils are plastic and they should not be inside the human body. Most individuals understand cooking with vegetable oil is extremely toxic. I certainly hope so. But even heavily cooked saturated fats cannot exchange ions or molecules properly. So even though saturated fats are far superior to polyunsaturated fats, we still don't want to really eat a heap of them cooked, right? I mean, that's why it's more available to be able to get all the stuff that you need in the raw fat, because you're going to be engaging in some type of oxidative pattern when you overcook lipids, even if you overcook the saturated fats. They will also swell to 50 to 60 times in size when cooked. This by no means is medical advice. It's just trying to tell you what you should, not trying to tell you what you should or should not eat. We are just sharing our health and fitness experience in the world because there is an abundance of false information. And this is from the people over at Mitigate Stress, who are more I guess you'd say metabolic, but now I think they're looking into some of the principles of raw animal food, which of course can very, very, very nicely complement a metabolic ideology, philosophy, or way of eating. It really depends. I mean, some people who do the raw animal foods, they just do animal foods. Some do some plants. Some eat a mixture of both. Like for me, I eat a mixture of both. It really depends what it is. Like for shrimp, I'll have them boiled, you know, which is actually still a better way of cooking them. And if I was to like grill them over really high heat or, you know, use a lot of like fat and use like a lot of high, like a high temperature, I will just boil them and just usually eat them as is or with a cocktail sauce. And something like oysters, I'll eat those raw, right? So if someone was actually just switching, like I said on Telegram a couple of days ago, just switching like half their food to, or half their animal food to raw, that would be a big difference for a lot of people. So here are some ideas about how to have some raw foods. We have seen more results in our skin health, hair, sleep, energy level, focus, pain management, recovery, hormones, and mood, even coming from a metabolic style of eating by including more raw animal foods. And I try to eat, like I said, about 50% of my animal foods raw. I always eat honey raw. I always eat dairy raw for the most part. I eat half of the eggs I eat raw. I eat half of the seafood I eat raw, and I eat half of the meat I eat raw, I would say, like right now in my life. And as it gets warmer, I'll probably end up eating more raw stuff. And I'm also kind of getting more creative with like ways to prep it raw. I mean, sometimes I'll just eat chopped up raw meat with like little bits of butter on it, and that'll just be how I eat it. Or sometimes I'll just eat it as is with nothing on it. But sometimes I want to make something a little more, you know, like a little more jazzy. So I'll make like a tartare with an egg yolk on top, or I like tataki. Sometimes I'll make that too, where you just like lightly sear the outside, like what they call like tuna tataki. So I try to do like a bunch of almost raw or mostly raw ways. And I'm so happy that this is finally gaining some type of like, you know, some steam finally. I mean, this is what our ancestors ate. Like one of the reasons people are so ill is because like they're eating the wrong type and of macronutrients, the wrong type of protein, the wrong type of fat, and the wrong type of carbohydrate. And then not only are they eating the wrong type, but they're also eating the wrong quality on top of it. Like if you're eating meat, dairy, or eggs from like CAFO, you know, factory farm concentrated animal feeding operation animals, then you're eating like a diabetic animal. You cannot be healthy and eat those things, like not long term. I mean, you just, because you're going to be getting just the wrong profile. Like you're not actually going to be getting all the benefits that would actually be in the meat, whether it be raw or cooked, because basically the meat is like a different product. It's from a sick animal. The meat from sick animals will make a sick person, right? So what are the five things you can do? You could eat raw saturated fat like cream, butter, eggs, raw dairy like milks and stuff, avocado, coconut cream, and animal fats. That would be like tallow and suet and things like that. I'm not too crazy about those. I'll eat a little bit of suet sometimes when I eat like kidneys, but I don't really like tallow. I've bought some creams that are tallow too, but I just don't really like the smell. I much more gravitate towards the quote vegetarian ones like coconut cream and butter as opposed to the animal fats, whether they're raw or cooked. I don't really like them. And like for me, I think the raw meat is very easy for me, which may sound kind of weird because I didn't grow up with it. But I think since I didn't grow up with it, I have no preconceived notions of like, you know, pot roast or meatloaf or any of that stuff. And I've always been the kind of person that liked to eat the meat separate from the other stuff. So I can still cook all the stuff I used to cook, and then I can just have my raw meat on the side. So it works nicely for me, given my philosophy of food and my journey with it. So yeah, eat raw saturated fat, which is going to be very different in the body, for sure, than eating it cooked. I mean, try to get what you can, you know, I mean, depending on your area. One of the easiest animal foods to get raw is eggs of good quality, right? I wouldn't really recommend eating like just supermarket meat raw. I wouldn't really recommend eating that anyway, because it's not really so good. But eggs, like good eggs, are probably the easiest thing to get raw. It's difficult sometimes, depending on where you live, to get raw dairy, but just a thought. Sometimes some of the easiest foods to get raw that are high quality would be eggs, like I just said, raw honey, which should say unheated on the package. And another food would be fish, like good quality fish, like wild fish or something like that. So that's something else that you could definitely look into. So cook, number two would be cooking our meat less, what they call blue, like the French has something called black and blue, which is like beyond rare, or eating it raw from a clean local source and mostly fresh, never frozen. So that's definitely, I guess, optimal. Unfortunately, that's not always available. I mainly get most of my meat frozen, which I wish wasn't the case, but it seems like that's the best alternative in regards to quality, because I am lucky enough to have access to meat that is good quality, but unfortunately the majority of it comes frozen. I want to look into more ways to get fresh meat because it's way healthier for you and I think the texture is better. So that would include things like organ meats, fowl, wild-caught shellfish, red meat, wild game, all, you know, grass-finished, essentially pastured type of stuff. And I've only had raw fowl, chicken, once, but I think I'm going to explore it again. I think I'm actually going to look into doing something with that. And some of the recipes will call for making like a ceviche-style chicken, where you'd use like lemon or lime juice to, quote, cook it. So just something to think about. Maybe in the summer I'll make something like that. So number one was about the fat. Number two was about the meats. And always remember that the nutrients are going to be more bioavailable when they are eaten raw. So even though, let's say, steak is a pretty decent source of bioavailable protein, if you eat it raw, it'll be even better. And actually, you need a little bit less to be satiated. So in a way, you could say maybe it's a more affordable option, right? If you're already eating the grass-fed meat. Number three would be more raw eggs. And number four would be trigger pointing or corrective exercises, like correcting your gait and your posture and your throwing mechanics, more movement in general. And yes, movement is very important. Gait and posture are also very important for your shoulders, your feet, your neck, and your posture of your tongue as well. So that's why this chat feedback is really making that really bad for people with the breathing. I'm going to do a show about sleep pretty soon, and I'm going to talk about more of that at that point when I have those notes in front of me. And number five would be some raw juicing. Some of these juices are okay. Of course, I'm not a huge proponent in the juicing because I think some of these vegetables can be kind of just intense, but some vegetables are better juiced than others. Sometimes a juice now and then can feel cleansing. Of course, if all you're doing is just drinking vegetable juice and you're fasting or you're not eating meat, that's not really a good regime. These juices are really for more of a detox. Like when you really think about it with food, you have to honor both the plant and the vegetable kingdom and look at the vegetable kingdom as things that are going to be detoxing for us, right? Going to be very cleansing for us. And then you can look at the stuff from the animal kingdom as being like rebuilding and restorative and such. So I think it's an important way to kind of look at it from like a whole panoramic picture and not get into that, you know, dialectic of which one's better than the other one. They're both serving different purposes, right? And I guess you can kind of include fruits in the plant kingdom, even though they're, you know, they're different than vegetables, but you know, fruits have a lot of minerals, a good source of carbohydrates. So, I mean, they both have merit. And the easiest food for most people to eat raw is fruit, right? A lot of people already have a comfortable relationship with eating raw fruit, although you can cook it sometimes too and take the seeds out and the skin and do all that type of stuff. But just something to think about, just a little more of rethinking one's reality, right? Because there's so many things out there that they want you rethinking. How about rethinking your reality as opposed to what they want you to be rethinking? Just something I wanted to share right there. All right, so let's see if I have anything else more for this broadcast. I'm getting a bit hungry. So far we talked about, well, not so savory of a topic in the first hour or so, but it was important information. It was important information about what's going on in the world. And now I'm giving information out about, well, how we can make ourselves more resilient, right? Make these things just kind of roll off of our back and not get ourselves caught up in this mix of just going crazy with all the information out there. It's easy to do because, well, there's so much out there going on all the time and things are moving so quickly, but it's important to always put yourself first. That is always what is important. And I guess if you're a racialist, you do put yourself first in a way. So let's finish out the broadcast with this little article from Carnivore Aurelius about putting yourself first. Modern society has conditioned you to desperately seek approval and acceptance from others. And of course, that's the gas of social media. Most people optimize their lives based on what others might think or say about who they are and what they do. They only are satisfied if others are satisfied of them. To be content with themselves requires that others be content with them. Do not live your life on spectator mode, leaving your sense of worth in the hands of people who likely don't care about you. Will lead a life of misery. Every action you take will be to maximize acceptance and validation, so much so that you'd rather be wrong with the crowd than right by yourself. You will begin to do things born from speculation about how others might react to the things you do. Imagine what a never-ending battle that is. Dependence on anything external for happiness is slavery. 100%. And look at these people who are Oreidians, you know? Think about that. If you are constantly seeking validation from others, you are letting others define who you are. If others think you are great, you will think you are great. If they think you suck, you will think you suck. Stop worrying if other people like you. Most people don't even like themselves. That's a zinger right there. It's true. Rid yourself of this mind, quote, virus. Break free and relish your independence. Put yourself first. How can you realize your full potential if you never give yourself the opportunity to understand and discover what you actually are, how you actually feel, and what you actually think? This is your life. It's not Zog's life. It's your life. Live for yourself, not on behalf of others. Who gives a shit what other people think? Your sense of worth starts from within. You're an individual. You're independent. You have the genes of a warrior destined to conquer. And yes, if you are an Aryan, you definitely do. Transcending the need for external approval starts from within. Don't listen to other people's expectations. Live up to your own. Stop comparing yourself to others. Stop looking around for validation. Be harder on yourself and the world is on you. Your independence will radiate and validation from others or lack thereof will become a mere byproduct of living your life the way you're chosen to live it. Nothing in the external world will fulfill you. Everything of material existence is made of empty atoms anyway. Yes, good stuff. Definitely. And it definitely is. We should always put ourselves first and not get caught up in any of that Zog mix. You know, there's so many things out there that are just so zoggy. So zoggy. And it's time to optimize and to get away from any of this Zog, right? I mean, I feel like this Zog stuff is going to be here for, I feel, at least a little while. So even if it's here, it doesn't mean that we have to lose course or sense of the beauty. You know, we can still enjoy those things, even if we have this Zog stuff. And hopefully one day a real rain will come and wash all the scum off the streets. So I'll leave it at that on this sunny Saturday day here on Oy Vey Island. Sunny but cold. Really, really cold. I was out yesterday and, well, two of the places I wanted to go for a walk were closed because of Oy Vey AI. Two nature preserves were closed. And then finally I went and took a walk on the beach. But I ended my beach walk abruptly because, well, there were some creeps there. Amazing. I can't even go outside and get some decent exercise on certain days. Thinking actually about perhaps joining a gym again. I don't even know if I want to do that. Do I actually want to work out in the costume? I don't know. I'll ponder it. Anyway, I'm your host, Tabitha. You were listening to White Wellness on the American National Radio Network. Be sure to catch all the wonderful broadcasts on our network. I'm wishing everyone an amazing Saturday. Happy daylight savings times tomorrow. Spring forward, fall back. We will be losing an hour of sleep depending on where you are in the world. I know some of us don't do this. And we will be getting an extra hour, I guess, of, what is that again? I guess it starts to get darker later, so you get more of that summer vibe going on. And pretty soon we're going to have the spring equinox, and we're going to have Ostara, what some of us know as Easter, right? So a lot of good stuff coming up on the calendar. Don't allow the Skeksis to suck your essence. Enjoy your life and do not relinquish your warrior spirit. Sat Nam.